Good morning from Carmel, New York.
Hi, this is Kara from Kalamazoo.
K-A-L-A-M-A-Z-O-O, what a gal.
You got it. I'm speaking with John Pizzarelli, I hope.
Yes, you are.
Wonderful.
Can you just imagine if it wasn't and somebody knew the song anyway?
It's possible, but I'm awfully happy it's the real Pizzarelli I'm talking to here.
It is.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I got a gal in Kalamazoo.
This is Weekend Let's Hear It. I'm Kara LaRance. Swing guitarist John Pizzarelli is coming to Bell's Eccentric Cafe on Friday, May 18th. Pizzarelli's trio will be headlining an evening of swing and blues that also features the Michigan group Organissimo and California blues guitarist Little Charlie Beatty. Growing up, John Pizzarelli watched his father, the famous jazz guitarist Bucky Pizzarelli, playing tunes at home for fun with his uncles, and was encouraged to join in by learning an instrument. Today, John Pizzarelli has recorded over 20 solo albums. He established a long-running nightclub gig at New York City's Café Carlyle with his wife, Broadway actress and singer Jessica Molaski. Together, they also host a weekly radio program, Radio Deluxe. So, John, where again are you right now?
I'm actually I have a little cabin that's about an hour north of New York City that when I don't have to do anything in the city, I escape to, and it's right on a little lake. So I'm up here for a couple of days, and then I'll go back on Sunday night. So I've been up since pretty much since Tuesday.
I've been reading a little bit about your background, your life in music, and your big family of musicians. I couldn't help but think of my own dear husband, who was actually spending summers on Long Island growing up in a town called Patchogue, where
sure,
a bunch of Italian families would get together and they'd be cooking late night all'olio pasta.
Oh, sure. Well, that's what we do. That's what basically goes on up here. It's, when I get to come up here, I can cook and practice. And we have a bunch of friends who all live along the lake, too. So we take turns making dinner and having fun up here, which is really, you know, how everybody sort of decompresses from the madness of the city.
Is it safe to say that's kind of how you grew up, too?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, I grew up watching my father. My father's family basically did that on Sundays at my father's uncle Pete, my father's mother's brother Peter, and his brother Bobby. They would gather at Pete's house. There's even a little instrumental record I made a bunch of years ago called Sunday at Pete's. And it was basically just a lot of the songs that they would play. They played all those old Americana songs, Bye Bye Blues and Bye Bye Blackbird and Alabama Bound and Caroline in the Morning and Yes Sir, That's My Baby and Ain't She Sweet and songs like that. And that was all after they had dinner. The kids, we were sort of relegated to, you know, wherever they could stick us while they were having their dinner. But then we'd all gather in the living room afterwards and they'd play banjos and guitar and stuff like that. So that I got involved in, you know, the only way they take you seriously is if you learned an instrument. And I wanted to. I thought they were having so much fun that I wanted to jump in. So that's how I got to play in the tenor banjo when I was about 6 years old.
At what point did you hit the road with a professional gig?
It would have been with my father somewhere along the line. I think the first real one is I got included in the Odessa, Texas used to have a jazz party that lasted for an entire week. So when I was about 20, I went out there. I was replacing somebody, but I got on sets and things. So they'd have about 25 to 30 guys, and they would put groups together and play from 7 till midnight in little half-hour shifts. And so I got into that, and that was like one of the first times that I got a check of significance. But I was playing with guys like Yank Lawson and Bob Haggard and Scott Hamilton and Warren Vache and my dad, and got to be around a lot of great musicians on that one.
At this point, was this you're focusing on guitar playing, or was it trumpet
Oh, well, I was playing trumpet in college, and I had played, you know, that was the instrument that I sort of learned notes and things on. The guitar I was sort of had picked up because they were around the house, and I could play along to records and sort of learn by ear. And from sitting around my dad, I would pick up a lot of the jazz stuff that I learned. And trumpet was just sort of like what we would say, quote unquote, what was my legit instrument. And then when I was about, I had a really good trumpet teacher at the University of Tampa, where I went to school for three semesters. Mm-hmm. And his name was Ron Byerly, and he taught me how good the trumpet was. And then I realized how hard it was too. So I had a great affection for the trumpet, but the guitar came much easier to me, and that's how I made my living, or started to anyway.
Where did you learn the most about voice and singing?
Well, then I had always been singing in little bands throughout high school, playing a lot of Beatles songs and James Taylor and Peter Frampton and all those guys, Jackson Browne, Billy Joel, and when I started working with my dad and started to work in restaurants and things where I was playing more of a standard repertoire, I found the music, through a really long story, I found the music of Nat Cole. They had just re-released the two records of the Nat Cole Trio, the best of the Nat Cole Trio parts 1 and 2, and I just attached myself to that music. As a 20-year-old, it was easy to try and learn songs that said Straighten Up and Fly Right or Route 66 or Frim Fram Sauce as opposed to I Get a Kick Out of You or Night and Day. It was a better repertoire to learn as a youngster. So that was really what got me singing. I started to find as many Nat Cole records with this trio that I could find. And then people would lead me in the directions of Chet Baker and Kenny Rankin and Michael Franks and people who sang more like I did. And that was really how I started to develop into something.
The album that I see as your most recent, I don't know if you have something brand new on this tour, but it looks like from 2017, you released an album called Sinatra and Jobim at 50. Will you have that along with you and some of the repertoire on Friday?
We'll do some of that. We'll do some Nat Cole and we'll do some Johnny Mercer stuff. I got your fantastic local Detroitian, Paul Keller, is going to play bass with us, who's just, I've known him for 20 some odd years since I saw him play with Diana Krall when she first started. And so he's going to play with me, and he's just sensational. And so we'll do a lot of that. He's been playing with us a lot. And my regular piano player, Konrad Pashkutsky, will play. And so we'll mix it all up. There'll be a few things from Sinatra and Jobim, as well as some Johnny Mercer and Duke Ellington and things like that.
I want to play a cut off of this latest album.
Great.
What's something you'd like us to hear, maybe?
I think Bobbles, Bangles, and Beads. When Sinatra and Jobim made their great record together, which was called Francis Albert Sinatra and Antonio Carlos Jobim, and that was released in 1967, they not only did Jobim songs, but they found a few American standards, and one of them was Bobbles, Bangles, and Beads, and that's, we found that to be a fitting way to kick off the record. So that's always one that I'm particularly fond of.
Bobbles, bangles, hear how they jing, jingling a. Bobbles, bangles, bright shiny beads. Sparkles, spangles, your heart will sing, sing-a-ling a. Wearing bobbles, bangles, and beads, you'll bangles.
What a great sound. That's John Pizzarelli's take on Baubles, Bangles, and Beads from his 2017 release, Sinatra and Jobim at 50. Mr. Pizzarelli and his trio will appear at Bell's Eccentric Cafe on Friday, May 18th, with music beginning at 7 p.m. featuring Organissimo, followed by California blues guitarist Little Charlie Beatty, and finally John Pizzarelli and his trio. I wanted to bring up something kind of sensitive here, because I think you probably have opinions about the Gibson Guitar Factory. Now, this is a factory that began in Kalamazoo.
Kalamazoo.
And now Gibson has gone bankrupt. Since it's just such a hot topic right now, I'd love to hear what Gibson has meant to you and maybe what your take on this is.
Well, I having not completely read all the stuff about it, it is a sad, but I will say it's sad because the Gibson guitar, you know, when you think about, you know, how the guitar came to be, Gibson was one of the first ones, just even as a jazz guitar. All the early Gibson and Epiphone guitars were part of, you know, the Gibson L5 and the Lloyd Lore and those early archtop guitars that were made or works of art, and then, you know, into the making of the Les Paul and the SG and all those great guitars, the Destroyer and the Flying V. There were some amazing guitars that they made. It's amazing that the evolution of the whole thing, you know, how the solid body guitar was really something for so long, and how that's really sort of it's not what it used to be. And the same, and you know, there's a lot more people playing acoustic guitars, the round hole steel string flat top guitars and things like that. It's just it's always you know, the world works in crazy ways. It's so sad that things, you know, come and go the way they do. I feel the same way about restaurants in New York City that people would go to forever, and they change. So it's always it's a sad time because the products that came out of Kalamazoo and the Gibson factory were so amazing.
Do you have any Gibson instruments in your collection?
I have. My dad actually has two old, I think it's two. He's got two L5s, two old Gibson L5s. We always, when I get to go, when I go over to see my dad, who's 92 now, every once in a while I'll take down the Gibson and one of the other Epiphones of his and just play them for him. And I say, which one do you like better? And he looks at him and he puts his hand out like, they're both good. So it is fun to play those. And actually my gold top electric guitar that I play, seven string guitar, was made by Bill Mole in Springfield, Missouri, was modeled after the gold top guitars that Gibson made in the 50s and 60s that Scotty Moore played for Elvis, so there, I do have a connection to that guitar in a certain way.
You just led me to my next point, because a guitarist friend of mine said, please ask him about his seven-string guitar. Why seven strings?
Well, my dad was influenced dramatically by a man named George Van Epps, who added a seventh string to his guitar, to his Epiphone guitar, in 1938. And he wanted his guitar to have more of a range like a piano. And it wasn't until the 60s, I think the mid-60s, that Gretsch decided to mass-produce a seven-string guitar, electric guitar that everybody could buy. And my dad bought one, and it was it's a great way to accompany things. I mean, if you can hear this, you can even hear, I just changed my strings. And there's the low A. And so instead of these chords, you have that low bass note. Well, the idea was to be able to create a bass line when accompanying somebody else or playing guitar solos. You get a lot of, you have now at least five more keys with low notes that are available to you on the guitar. So it's really a really interesting instrument, and there's a number of more guitar players who have picked it up in the last 10, 15 years, but for a long time it was my father and a few other guys, and that was about it. So As I have always said, there are seven string guitars that were in our house. If you want, and they were always on the couch. And if you wanted to sit down, you had to move a guitar. So eventually I figured out, well, maybe I'll learn how to play it instead of move it.
And that's the first time anybody's played guitar for me on the phone.
There you go. I hope you could hear it.
I could. Oh, there's something so charming about the flirtatious nature of a lot of these great American songbook standards. When I was, listening to your music, it just took me right out of the problems of today into a more idealized charm somehow. And then I felt like this upwelling of kind of joyfulness and a little bit of, I don't know, maybe a twinkle of evil's the wrong word.
I know what you mean.
But I want to feel that sophisticated all the time.
Right. Well, that's the beauty of the songs. And, we're talking about songs that have been around for almost 100, some of them almost 100 years, and a lot of them over 50 and 60, 70, much older than that. So it is a lot older than even I'm quoting, but they are really works of art, and they are sophisticated, and they are sometimes, in its their own little way, they are a little evil too. Cole Porter in particular had a way of, just the way he would state things, and he wasn't saying them outright. He was hiding those little messages in the songs, and people got, they banned some of those songs on Bees Do It, Birds Do It. What do they do? Everybody got, they fall in love was the key, but that's not what people were thinking that was referring to, So it's a very, they're really wonderfully crafted, and they do present such beauty too, So inside of a, It Had to Be You, or Our Love Is Here to Stay, or All the Things You are really amazing songs and so well crafted, and they've really stood the test of time.
I'd like to ask you something I've talked to a few jazz musicians about, the idea of a jazz standard. How flexible are you with that term?
As I go out and play music, and being someone from the swing jazz era who's influenced by Count Basie and Oscar Peterson and Nat Cole and Benny Goodman, it's been fun to go, well, how do we find songs that my friends listen to? I'm 58, so I grew up just at the beginning of the Beatles, and just at the breakup of the Beatles was when I was, just going in high school. So how do I find those songs to play for my friends? Or how is the best way to translate a Beatles song or a Michael McDonald song or a James Taylor song into a jazz song for a different generation of people who might go, oh, I know the song, but I didn't know the style you put it in, and I really like that style. And then you can say, well, it came from Nat Cole, or it came from Oscar Peterson, the idea of the arrangement of that song. And when those two things get together in the right way, it becomes, it's really interesting. I feel that, you start to stretch how the styles go, and you bring different generations to the party, if you will.
Isn't it nice that we live in an age of recorded music where if you have the desire to do the research, you can really hear so much from the original performers?
Yeah, I was revisiting a book written about Nat King Cole by Mark David Epstein in 1994, I believe, or 94, 95. And while doing it, he's mentioning record dates that Nat Cole Trio had with Lionel Hampton. And I was thinking, well, wait a second. I got out my little machine and went click, click, click. And those records are on, you can find them. And whereas in 94, you'd have to get off your couch and get a cab and try to go to a music store and see where they all existed, in a record store. So the availability of those things now is wonderful, that I'm able to find these records that I didn't, you know, wasn't aware of, you know, or mentioned in a book, and then I can literally go to my phone and click, 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 and going, oh, that's what that guy's talking about.
I'm curious to know if you are acquainted with even friends with a jazz guitarist who visited Kalamazoo a few months ago, Gene Bertoncini.
Oh, sure. I've known Gene Bertoncini since I could speak, and we shared the same birthday and the same love of Bucky Pizzarelli. Gene was a contemporary, probably 10 years younger than my dad.
Yeah.
12 years younger than my dad, I believe, but a sensational guitarist. And him and my dad did many, many dates together in New York City and subbed for each other now and then. And Gene is just a fantastic guitar player and a great guy.
A very suave and charming guy, yes.
Yes, to say the least.
I wish we could dive into the album just one more time, actually. Would you pick out maybe something from the Brazilian side of Sinatra and Jobim at 50 for us to enjoy right now?
Sure. You could pick the track Água de Beber, which I believe is track 2. And that track features Daniel Jobim, the grandson of Antonio Carlos Jobim, singing the song at the beginning. And the two of us share this little scatting part that you'll hear up front. And then in the back, I sing one of the verses in English. So this is something that was when Sinatra and Jobim sang together, you would hear Sinatra singing in English and then a little bit of Portuguese. In this case, we hear more Portuguese from Daniel Jobim and a little English from me at the end. And a guitar solo from me in there, too.
Eu quis amar, mas tive medo e quis salvar meu coração. Mas o amor sabe um segredo. O medo pode matar o seu coração. Água de beber. Água de beber, camará. Água de beber. Água de beber, camará. Biba dumba, tonerarara, biba dumba, toteia barara, biba dumba, dedumbi, dedumbé. Eu nunca fiz coisa tão certa. Entrei pra escola do perdão. A minha casa vive aberta. Abre todas as portas do coração. Água de beber. Água de beber, camará. Água de beber. The rain has to fall, let it fall on me. beber, água de beber, camará. Viva do mar, da pererarará.
John Pizzarelli and Daniel Jobim together on Agua de Beber from the album Sinatra and Jobim at 50. John Pizzarelli is my guest here on Weekend Let's Hear It. I know there's a whole world of music we didn't get to touch on, but it was really great to chat with you for just a few minutes here on WMUK. And I hope you have a great show in Kalamazoo. Where's your tour taking you besides Michigan?
I'll then head to the West Coast. I actually get to Minneapolis and then Seattle. I'll do 2 weeks at Birdland, 1 week with my wife, Jessica Malasky, and then 1 week with a little horn group that I have called the Swing Seven. And then I'll head out to the West Coast and mostly California before Labor Day. I get out work a week before Labor Day. So this is... Oh, I get to Tampa and Decatur, Georgia, too. So I'll be running around pretty well between now and Labor Day.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you here in Kalamazoo. Thanks for chatting with me, John.
Thanks for having me, and I look forward to seeing everyone there. And for everything that you might have missed on the radio from me, you can hear it live if you come out to the show.
John Pizzarelli and his trio, along with the band Organissimo and blues guitarist Little Charlie Beatty, all appearing Friday, May 18th at Bell's Eccentric Cafe. To hear the interview again and find further details, go to our website, wmuk.org. I'm Kara Lawrence. This is Weekend Let's Hear It. Have a great weekend.